The program is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. Today, we're presenting the 21st Poet Laureate of the United States, Juan Felipe Herrera. And here he is with an opening poem.
Jackrabbits, green onions, and witch's stew. Jackrabbits, green onions, and witch's stew. $3 in upside-down lemons and you. Dinky planet on a skateboard of dynamite. Oh, what to do? Chili peppers, Mrs. Oops. Dr. What? Mr. Space Station unscrewed. The Red Book of Ants says you better run. No siree. Laughing out loud, blowing my bubblegum sun.
Put your seatbelts on. Juan Felipe Herrera is here, and he is our new poet laureate, and he's the first poet laureate I've ever seen on Facebook. Did you friend the nation, or did you just friend poets? The first thing I saw on Facebook was you and your grandchild, Kimiko, right?
Yes.
Then the next thing I saw was a picture of the Capitol saying, I've come to town.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I was blown away. I said, this poet laureate's real.
Well, I sure appreciate it. I want to be real. I want my poetry to be real. Yes, you know, a friend of mine, Tom Lutz, says, why don't you get on Facebook? This was a few years ago. And I said, okay, you know. And then he sent me some friends to friend with. And all of a sudden, I have a lot of friends. And I do have a lot of friends. And I love my friends.
But that was such a nice entry for your presence here. I mean, here you are in the highest chair of poetry. And the first thing we know about you is your granddaughter. That was really heartwarming, I thought. Now, tell us how you learned that you were our new poet laureate.
Well, it was most interesting and ticklish at the same time. Rob Casper, the director of the Poetry Center and the Literature Department here at the Library of Congress, he says, why don't you call me up in a couple of weeks? He said this in May. And he gave me the date, and I said, okay, Rob, I'll call you on that date. We'll talk soon. And I said to myself, well, wait a minute. Why are we making an appointment to talk? Why didn't we just talk right then? I said, okay, well, he's busy, and that's fine with me. I was in UW Seattle teaching American Ethnic Studies, my little office, really cool office, cool people. And so I waited, and I called. And we always have this joke about grilled cheese sandwiches, me and Rob Casper. And so I called, and I got the number, and I made the call. And I said, oh, I'm delivering 2x4 grilled cheesers on a flatbed truck. And then the person at the other end of the line said, oh, excuse me, sir, this is Dr. Billington's office, and he would like to talk to you. I said, okay, thank you. Hello, Dr. Billington. Oh, hello there, Juan Felipe. You know, we've been talking about your poetry, and I'd like to know if you're willing to be the next poet laureate of the United States. I go, yes, Dr. Billington. I'm honored. I'm humbled. He says, do you have any questions? I go, not at this time.
That's a great story. You really had no clue.
I had no clue.
You had no clue.
None.
Well, you're here with us now. And is this a new book?
This is a new book.
Is it from City Lights?
It's from City Lights, San Francisco, yes.
Brand new.
Okay,
so let's hear another couple poems.
Okay, this is called Notes on the Assemblage. And I might as well read you this poem on the artwork of Alfredo Arreguin, who is a great Seattle University of Washington grad and Pacific Northwest painter, Alfredo Arreguin. And the word Tasmano is a word that's a title of his poem, one of his paintings. So I worked the poem in that way, and it has a lot of colors in it and Spanish and sights that he mentions. So it's very a cubist and mosaic-y. Tasmano, Tasmano, let me hold you and let me bury myself into your seasoned salmon skin. Ice, disappearance, blackness, lips, cabelleras, mascaras, cholula, masks, culebra, gold, snake, spattered spiral, breast, la lumbre, the fire, Michoacana, de las cumbres, from the tips, from the peaks, brujas, witches, ripping spirit, flesh, blue, madness, locuras, dentro, inside, greener, yellowness, Tehuana, Indian woman, Tehuana, salt, storms, arms, I bow to your tejido, your woven tapestry, king, Kodiak, spirit, and your sacred belly egg. Man, woman, flayed scales, fins gone, lives gone, face destroyed, turquoise, azar, by chance, albedrío, by chance, throne, and unknown.
Surreal, neorealistic, mosaic collage, as you say. Let's hear another.
Let's do another one in the same mode, perhaps. And this one is about, who knows? Here it is. I think the question will give you a sense. I do not know what a painting does. I do not know what a painting does. It lean against the wall. It could be any color of wall or house in the kitchen, on the refrigerator, or next to the hard-carved wooden masks, the mirror that wakens when you pass by. You add grease. You tap it with a palette knife. The paste moves. Then it thins its metals into the glazes, a kind of staccato. It could be a self-portrait with all the difficulties, veiled in the half-dark jacket, slapped with burning rectangles, titanium white, as if they were confetti, all in stillness. What else could it be? It is flat. It is smaller than you. Even if it is a wall or a fence or a sky where you move your brushes, what does it do? That is my question. It looks back, I think. That is why you paint. You are waiting for the thing in itself to come back to you, to greet you in its odd, oblong, stunted manner, its elegance. It feeds you. It surrounds you. Wherever you go, you do not have to walk into it. Your tiny room, it merely poses for you when you are at your beginnings. Then it follows you, passes you, dissolves ahead of you, where it is waiting for you. When you get there, you will not know it until you see that it is seeing you, seeing you.
Juan Felipe Herrera, you move. Man, you know how to move. And you know those consonants, you know those vowels, and you really move. I have counted more than 27 books that you've written since 1972, and there must be even more. Your three children's books that I've read, there may be more, I think will turn a corner in children's literature. Just as Shel Silverstein did it for poetry for children 25 years ago, your children's books are so contemporary and so significant, they are going to start turning the corner for children's literature. Really loved them.
Thank you.
I see that you do everything. You draw, you're artistic, you've written for stage and film and theater pieces. What art form have you not done?
I want to do some sculpture. I always wanted to be in sculpture. And I remember looking at the Italian sculptors back in 1989 at the University of Iowa in the art building. And I'd pull out those amazing giant books on sculpture. And I would look at the Italian sculptures. And I would also see steel sculptures and mobiles from the 50s, the Calder's mobiles. And, of course, Picasso's wooden, plaster, ceramic pieces, and iron, giant horse face pieces. And, that just moves me.
This is the year because, well, you're retired, so you can, the world is open for you. Do you have space to do that, though? That's massive stuff.
That's massive stuff, you know. And when I was at the University of Iowa, I wanted to be part of the sculpture workshop. And they had a foundry. And I already had come up with my first piece. And then I realized that it's not just a workshop. It's hours and hours and hours.
It is the tools. I will be looking forward to seeing that. I want to talk about Senegal Taxi. That book blew me away. Would you just tell our audience, just briefly, what that book is about?
Oh, you know, I'd love to. Thank you. Senegal Taxi, you know, I wanted to do something when I was reading about Darfur and the children and families that were massacred, the villages that were burnt down and bombed down and shot down, and how a number of them that managed to survive were put in refugee camps. And then perhaps some of them, in some form, made the big trek and journey to Senegal, which is really far, in which, you know, you have to cross these burning, scorching deserts. And, of course, you're going to run into these kind of, into captivity. You're going to run into people with machine guns and AK-47s that are just going to nab you, just going to nab you and take you and throw you into what are called ghost houses. And these are shacks, you know, where you're tortured and killed. So imagine what it takes to just live. What is life in Africa in this particular experience under a very high degree, a horrific degree of oppression and exploitation? And then they these beautiful people in this this terrible, terrible, painful experience ideally would make it. The dream is to make it to Senegal, to make it to that place, and get on a boat, make it to the Canary Islands, and the big dream, make it to Barcelona, and maybe make it to New York. So I wanted to look at that experience at its core. And so I there's a number of characters in the book, and three of them are children, and they're ghosts. So the ghosts are trying to escape. And then there's the Janjaweed, the paramilitary killers, and with AK-47s. And then there, I said, this is not enough. I need to open up the scape of this drama, of this story. And if I just tell it through the voice of the ghosts and the Janjaweed, which in itself was very, was a difficult choice to make, it's not going to be enough. So then I said, I'm going to ask that AK-47 to speak. So the AK-47 speaks in this book. And I said, what about the flies? And what about the ants? They have a lot to say. They have another point of view, a point of view I'm not going to get to if I just stay with human beings. And I did that. And then I said, well, you know, this is perhaps getting a little too serious. What if I have a news anchor called the Bart Crimson interview the Janjaweed? And what if I have an interview, a television interview? And there's a television somewhere in this village that's busted. Maybe this interview seeps out of there. It oozes out of that television. So then I have this interview.
It's unbelievable.
Yes.
It is from the rubble of war.
From the rubble.
You break it up into form of poetic phraseology, of dialogue, of visuals, utterances, conversations. It's like war itself. It's like the breakage, but what's left from the ruins. And what it did for me was realize how much freedom we can have in writing. And I think that I call you the poet with freedom of heart, because you write as if there's nothing to lose. Is there anything at stake? What do we have to lose?
We don't. You know, we have to just throw ourselves into the life of the people. And any doubts, any sense of, oh, I can't do it, I don't know about this, how could I do this, I have no right to do this, and I must hold back, I must wait, I must do years of study, I should. Those are hindrances and barricades.
If anyone hears that, if anyone is listening, hear that.
Yeah, so you must, if you have the fire in your heart and you want to pour kindness out of your being, which is abundant and infinite, and then work from there. And if you are a word person and you have ink, then just do that.
You really took away the fear from it. When I read Cynical Taxi, I remembered how to write. I thought, we can say and do anything. Yes, but that Cynical Taxi is very popular, which is interesting because it's so very iconoclastic. And yet it's gotten good, very good notice, don't you think?
Yes, I hope so. I hope it can. Yeah, I hope so. Mm. I hope so. You know, when we throw ourselves into the fire and the work is, it comes out of the fire and the ashes, a lot of emotion, a lot of, you know, we're talking about a lot of suffering. So it's
and the way you use the children, I think, was the most powerful. because that's where it hurts the most, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
And Africa, when you think that Sudan is on the east and Senegal's on the west,
yes,
then people were trying to cross the whole continent of Africa, yes, weren't they? You know, on YouTube, because of your book, I looked up Senegal, and there is a 2-minute YouTube of driving in a Senegal taxi through the city, which is very interesting because it's post-war, but it's still pretty sobering.
It's pretty sobering.
So I was in that taxi after I read your book. I took a taxi ride through Senegal on YouTube, and it was about 5 years after the war this was filmed.
Yes.
Very interesting, though. You have brought a whole new world to me.
Well, thank you. You know, that's what I wanted to do. And this is told through mud drawings. This is told through mud.
Hieroglyphics on the walls of the caves.
Yeah, the poems are not poems. They're mud drawings made out of...
I hope everyone gets that book. This is Juan Felipe Herrera, and I'm going to ask for a couple more poems from his new book, which is titled what?
This is titled Notes on the Assemblage. And it was difficult to find a title for this book because I don't know. Sometimes it's just, it's a challenge. And I have a poem called Notes on the Assemblage. And I said, you know, that kind of fits this book because it has a lot of things in it and that perhaps wouldn't fit together. But sometimes things that are odd and different shapes and they point in different directions. We got to let them be. We got to let them be. And they're already there for us. No need to jam them into a consistent pattern that they don't really belong to. And sometimes books come together like that. You know, there's consistency, an agreement, some kind of agreement. This one is a little different. And yet there is an agreement. It's an assemblage. This is called Notes on the Assemblage. Use black and gray and speckled white construction paper. Use stripped, scraped, and perforated construction paper. Use found paper. Use cardboard, wet and mashed, overlay on old encyclopedias, sheets with images, something like Kentridge or Delmore Schwartz. Use soap to brush them. Draw with pencil and marker. Draw the soap and noodles, some stones. Draw with pencil and marker for outline. 11x14 sheet. Draw the muddy camp, the bus, the pier, the toilet line. Close-ups, too. How we look at each other. What we have on our faces. You can cross thought through it. You can escape into it and out. Through its holes, its gases. Our faces have changed. Can we go back? You can't wash it off, but you can erase it.
If I say the words that you were the only son of migrant workers in California, what is the first thing that pops out of your mind after that sentence?
My mother, Lucha.
Tell me about her.
Oh, you know, she was all spirit. She was all freedom. She always encouraged me to be free. She says, I don't want you to grow up like I did. You know, I wasn't allowed to sing. I wasn't allowed to dance, to go out into the public and dance and sing and join a theater. She wanted to be in a theater called Los Pirines in El Paso, Texas. This is the 20s and 30s when radio really came to life on the border with big, giant XJ XCJ radio power station in Juarez. So everybody wanted to, you know, perform, be a radio star. And there were little theaters always moving around, migrant theaters. So she wanted to be part of all that. And she said, but she didn't get to do that. She wasn't allowed to do that. Women were not allowed to do that. And the ones that made it just really, really had to break away and confront brothers and mothers and whoever was in the family that was saying, you know, it's dangerous out there. You know, a woman shouldn't do these things, and you should stay home and stay with me. I'm your mother. You have to stay with me until I die. And when I die, then you can go out and date. But for the moment, for sure, you're never going to be in that theater. So my mother, that was her experience. And then she told me when I was growing up as a teenager and younger, she said, I want you to be free. I want you to be free. Freedom, happiness, kindness, respect. You work on those things, and that's all you need to do. Everything else comes second.
A man who loves his mother.
Yeah.
So now yes. You're living her dream.
I'm living her dream.
Through you.
Through me.
And all of those things.
Yes.
And what did you get from your father?
My father, you know, he was a rambling adventurer. Easy to move. Let's go over here. Let's go to Ramona. What are we going to do in Ramona? Well, they got the best water in the world. But wait a minute. We're going to, after this, I think we're going to go to San Diego. But we just got here 2 months ago. San Diego has the best climate in the world. And he was born in 1882. And I was born when he was 66. So that gives you an idea of the range and the kind of landscape he had that kind of did allow him to move and travel. He came up, he jumped on a train at 14. He came from a little tiny straw-built village, laying under goats, drinking milk, and then he jumped on a train, like I said, and jumped out of the train in Denver, landed on snow, and looked out and said, I guess I'm going to have to do something here, and became a cowboy, cattle hand, ranch hand, railroad worker. And then bought some land in southern New Mexico by Las Cruces and Mezquite. And kept on going and kept on moving. So that was my father.
What's in you from that?
He was a quiet man. He was also a traveling man. And when things got difficult, he would speak up. But if things didn't get challenging, he just kept his cool.
So he was easygoing.
He was easygoing.
And your mother was a free spirit. A
free spirit.
And so you channeled both of those through you into your work.
I don't even have to channel it.
Oh, you don't even have to do that.
No, it's always with me.
Let's have another poem.
Okay.
Juan Felipe Herrera.
Let's do another poem. This is for Phil Levine, one of our recent poet laureates, a great friend, colleague, mentor. He was there when I got to Fresno State in 1990 after I graduated from the University of Iowa's writing workshop. And he was waiting for me. I said, why is he waiting for me? I mean, there was Chicano Latin American Studies program, a beautiful program that I was invited to teach in. And he was there at the office, everything's fine. And I've been waiting for you, Juan Felipe. I said, oh, Phil, I said, this is so good to see you. Thank you for greeting me and extending friendship on my first day. That's Phil Levine. And then we used to perform and read together, and we'd joke on stage before the reading began. And we were like, two jokey guys before the heavy-duty readings, began. And he read, and I read, and Natasha Trethewey, another poet laureate we've had, a great poet, also read. So we were like that. We were buddies and jokesters. And he was a great mentor, a great poet.
Well, this will be fine to hear.
Yes, this is called Hey Phil, for Phil Levine, rest in peace. They are writing about you, Phil, good stuff. The prizes, Detroit, and that poem where you said in past lives you were a wild sun-crested fox being chased by ladies and gentlemen on horseback. You said you would wake up with a poem ready that had slipped untangled from a dream. All you had to do was sit up and write. The stage was a poem too, even though most of us were too prepared. You preferred to joke before we went on, before the poetry light hit us on the face. It did not matter to you. You just carved, chiseled, punctured, rotated, jitterbugged, and whirred past the distant gate.
What are you going to do to create a house of colors here at the Library of Congress?
Yes, that's my laureate project, La Casa de Colores, the House of Colors. And it really is a house of all of us, for all of us, that we all are invited to be in. We all are in that house already. That's everyone here in the United States, our house of colors, of many languages and many voices. So we're going to roll out we're going to roll out a theme every month for a poem that's going to be built by daily, hourly contributions of lines and poems by people tapping in.
Everyone's invited to the party.
Everyone's invited to the party and become the House of Colors and see your poems on the House of Colors website. So we're going to work on that, and that's going to come out. And every month we're going to, you know, change the style, the theme, the approach. We're going to go deep. We're going to go high. We're going to swivel around. We're going to get on a roller coaster. We're going to do things in schools and on and on. And we're also going to have El Jardín, the garden. That's part of the same project. And El Jardín, the garden, is we're going to go to the garden. And the garden is all the beautiful materials and archives here at the Library of Congress. I just got out of the Hispanic division yesterday, and I was looking at Don Quixote's first Miguel Cervantes novel, the first novel.
The original?
The original. I was holding it in my hands. I was also looking at the Pelé, the great soccer, amazing, magical player from Brazil. And a book that's almost as big as a table that weighs 35 pounds. And I was noticing the thousands and hundreds of thousands of people that loved Pelé, that love Pelé, and how big soccer is, and how human it is, and how we gather, and how we find ourselves, and how we love ourselves, and how we celebrate, and how we get emotional, and how we go up and down and cry. And
become a family over
become
soccer.
A family.
Right.
So that could be something that I'm going to bring to El Jardín for people to reflect on and perhaps to write about.
The House of Colors and the Garden.
Yes.
Have you always wanted to do something like this, bring together the world?
I love it. Yes.
And here's your chance.
That's what I do.
Here is your... Yes, it is what you've done. It is. And when your students study with you, do they learn to be free?
Oh, they're kind of free already.
It's the teachers who clamp down the lid on them.
They're free already. And if they start getting a little crusty, I kind of throw some surprises at them. And but they're good. You know, they're great. They go ahead and do constructions. They do Russian material that I have them incorporate into their poetry, or they do fluxus constructions with poems that I encourage them to explore, or they just look at materials they haven't looked at. Big art books, Chagall, and on, you know, expressionists and impressionists. I have them tear a newspaper into bits and rearrange it and then read it like a poem to show them that its leaps and bounds are very important in a poem. You know, we just go A, B, C, D, E, F, G. That's okay. You know, nothing is really bad. Nothing is really wrong. But explore jumping from a cliff in your poem.
And it all comes together,
and
doesn't
it? Will all come
together. Because it all comes from you.
It all comes from you.
The source.
And those yes, exactly.
The source. You are our source this year. And I think it's going to be a wonderful ride. Juan Felipe Herrera, he's our poet laureate, and he's going to give us a final poem.
This is a poem, the last poem of the book. It's called Poem by Poem. And this is in memory of Cynthia Hurd, Susie Jackson, Ethel Lanz, Reverend DePayne Middleton, Dr. Honorable Reverend Clementa Pinckney, Tywanza Sanders, Reverend Daniel Simmons, Sr., Reverend Sharonda Singleton, Myra Thompson, shot and killed while at church, Charleston, South Carolina. This is for them, and this is for all of us. Poem by poem, we can end the violence. Every day, after every other day. 9 killed in Charleston, South Carolina. They are not 9, they are each one alive. We do not know. You have a poem to offer. It is made of action. You must search for it, run outside and give your life to it. When you find it, walk it back, blow upon it, carry it taller than the city where you live. When the blood comes down, do not ask if it is your blood. It is made of 9 drops. Honor them. Wash them. Stop them from falling.
A poet for all of us. The program is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Mike Turpin does post-production at MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making this program possible. Funding is provided by the Witter Biller Foundation for Poetry and the Reva and David Logan Foundation. Our engineer is Mike Turpin. I'm Grace Cavalieri.